Hare Krishna. Well, it's very nice to be here with you all in Sri Vrindavan Dham and to have this opportunity to go through more of Srila Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion. This, of course, is one of our very important books in our Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada said it is something like the instruction manual, how to do it, how to become fully Krishna conscious. So normally, or at least in the past, we have focused generally on the first part of Nectar of Devotion, which is from the beginning, or the introduction specifically, through to and including chapter 19. And we haven't really so much ventured beyond that point, beyond the end of chapter 19. Although there is a lot more of Nectar of Devotion beyond chapter 19 also. But it is a little bit of a formidable task going beyond chapter 19. Even, of course, some of the later chapters coming up to 19 are also not easy, actually, at all. But beyond chapter 19, definitely, we're really getting onto the transcendental platform, which is nice, and it's, you know, not a problem if you are, or we are, or I am on the transcendental platform, that is. But if we're not so much, then sometimes it can be a little difficult to follow and really get a perspective on from chapter 20 onwards. But this course that we're going to do for the next 3 weeks, basically, is going to focus on the next part of Nectar of Devotion from chapter 20 through to and including 34. Nectar of Devotion, you may be aware, is divided into four different parts. Of course, the concept which is used in terms of that general format of presentation, the concept is one of an ocean, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of the nectar of devotion. So now, therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami, in dividing it into its different sections and the different stages of his presentation, he has also used that same concept. So he's divided it into four sides, as there are four sides of an ocean, eastern, southern, western, and northern. So the first section, which is from the introduction through to chapter 19, that is the eastern side of the ocean. And the next part, what we're going to be going through, from chapter 20 to chapter 34, that is the southern side of the ocean. And it seems the water gets a bit deeper on the southern side, you could say. I mean, there would be many ways of putting it, I suppose, but it's something like that. Yeah, and you have to be a bit more able to swim. So now, the subject really is bhava bhakti, in other words, the first part of perfect devotional service. Perfect devotional service is divided into two, bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. They're actually two levels of the same thing. They're not really two different things. There are two levels of the same thing. All these points we'll try to explain as we go on. Yes, we might wonder How could something which is perfect have different levels? How could there be different levels of perfection? Because if there's some idea of going from one level to another which is higher, then the obvious implication would be that the lower level is not actually perfect. There's something wrong with it, and therefore the higher level is better because it doesn't have that whatever it is which is wrong with the lower level. But here, of course, in Krishna consciousness, we have the concept of perfect, more perfect, most perfect. Krishna in Dwaraka is perfect. Krishna in Mathura is more perfect. Krishna in Vrindavan is most perfect. But then again, there are gradations even within Vrindavan. There's Vrindavan forest. So many areas are there. And finally, you arrive at Govardhan Hill. And then at Govardhan Hill, the highest level is Radha Kund. So it's sort of like perfect, more perfect, most perfect, even more perfect, and even more perfect. And really, it's unlimited, actually. So the idea that perfect devotional service can be divided into two levels is not a contradiction in and of itself, but it's something quite practical and real, and it'll become a little more apparent as we go on. Now, we have put together an overview book, which is quite comprehensive, actually. I don't know if any of you have read through it yet. A lot of it, to be quite honest and frank, a lot, not all, but a lot of it is based on another book put together by one of Prabhupada's disciples, His Holiness Dhanada Swami Maharaj, called The Waves of Devotion, which is an analysis, you could say, or like analysis, commentary, explanation of Nectar of Devotion. I don't know if the book is available here. Is it? It might well be a good idea. You know, I believe they're not charging you for the courses, so you've saved a bit of money. So maybe you can invest a little bit of it in getting that book. The least you could do, though, I would say, is invest 110 rupees and get the Nectar of Devotion here, because it will really help. Normally, we would expect the VIHE to provide all of you with a Nectar of Devotion, but they're not charging, so they're not doing it. So why don't you, over this weekend, before we get together again on Monday afternoon, why don't you all get a Nectar of Devotion at least? Is that okay? For your own sakes, really. It'll just help to make things clear as we go through. Yes. So, this next section then is dealing with bhava bhakti. Although really, as we go through, you'll see that the examples that are given to illustrate the many, many points which are made about perfect, the different aspects of perfect devotional service, you'll see that so many of the examples are not of devotees who are just on the level of bhava, but in the majority of cases, the examples which are given to illustrate the different points, they are actually of devotees on the level of prema. And this is because, in one sense, bhava and prema are one. They're both perfect devotional service. They're just different degrees, really, of the same thing, if you really get down to it. So therefore, when we say that the southern side of the ocean of nectar of devotion is about bhava bhakti, that is when it is taken on the simplest level. But actually, ultimately, the subject matter of this southern side of the ocean of nectar of devotion, the subject really is rasa. That will become apparent when on Monday we start reading through the book. We're not going to start going through the book itself today. But Prabhupada makes the point quite clearly in chapter 20 that this section is dealing with rasa. Because rasa is a combination of different ecstasies. Now, in the eastern side, beginning with the introduction and chapter 1, first of all, Srila Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami, they give a general introduction into the subject of devotional service. Then from chapter 2 to chapter 16, they discuss sadhana bhakti. Sadhana means to practice. So sadhana bhakti means the practice of devotional service. And in this context, practice means that you're learning. You're not perfect. You're imperfect. But now you're learning and trying and working on it and developing it. So that is what sadhana bhakti implies, the practice of devotional service, in the sense of going from the beginning stage up to the perfect stage, but sadhana bhakti stops there, just beneath bhava. That is where sadhana bhakti stops, and it then, on the level of bhava bhakti, becomes perfect devotional service. So chapter 2 to chapter 16 then, we're discussing sadhana bhakti. As a matter of interest, how many of you have already taken a course on that eastern side of nectar of devotion? So that section then is divided into three parts. From chapter 2 to chapter 5 is a general introduction to sadhana bhakti. Chapter 6 to chapter 14 is discussing vaidhi sadhana bhakti. Vaidhi means the rules and regulations. So that means the practice of devotional service on the basis of according to rules and regulations. And Rupa Goswami gives a definitive verse, which we have, it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila somewhere, chapter 22 somewhere, that there are three parts of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, three aspects to it. One is that there isn't any spontaneous attraction or attachment to Krishna. There is not really that. But one is acting, one is rendering devotional service on the basis of the instructions of the spiritual master. And thirdly, one is rendering devotional service on the basis of the instructions of scripture. So these are the three parts. No spontaneous attachment, serving under the direction of the spiritual master, and serving on the basis of scriptural injunction. That's Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. That's described from chapter 6 to chapter 14 of Nectar of Devotion. Then 15 and 16 are discussing the rather, what would you say, enigmatic or highly transcendental subject of Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. somewhat not incomprehensible, but just not as easy to understand and sort of, you know, get your finger on as Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is. Chapters 17 and 18 are discussing Bhava Bhakti, the first part of perfect devotional service. And chapter 19 is discussing Prema Bhakti, devotional service and pure love of God. So we are starting then from the point that Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada leave off there at the end of chapter 19. And Srila Prabhupada certainly makes the point that to understand the different aspects of bhava, actually, when we talk about the stage of bhava, bhava literally means ecstasy there, or Prabhupada translates it also as ecstatic love. A Sanskrit synonym is rati, R-A-T-I, which means intense attachment. So, when we talk about this level of bhava, of devotional service in ecstasy, now, it is composed of five different types of ecstasies, which are quite distinct from each other. Probably on Monday, we will just give a little overview, little introduction to these five bhavas. So on the level of bhava, a devotee experiences all these five ecstasies. Sometimes. But on the level of prema, which, as we said, is sort of the same thing, but just a different degree of the same thing. On the level of prema, then the ecstasies are always there. And in fact, usually many of them are always there. And as they mix together with all their different characteristics and the ways, different ways that they affect you, then the mixing together of these things, these bhavas, this is called rasa. Or this produces rasa, which Prabhupada translates as, well, in different ways, but in Nectar of Devotion generally, as a mellow taste. A mellow taste, very rich, very deep, and very transcendental. Mellow taste of ecstasy and different types of ecstasies and the interactions of those ecstasies on the purely transcendental platform. Now, Srila Prabhupada does make the point that these things cannot really be understood by an academic type of approach. Now, of course, that certainly means for people like material scholars, they will not be able to really understand what is rasa. They won't be able to really understand the different bhavas, the different ecstasies, and they won't really understand rasa, which is the mixing of the ecstasies and what is produced from the mixing of the ecstasies. So now, we may not be material academic scholars, but at the same time, we're not really Certainly I can say for myself, and with all due respect, I assume for yourselves too, we're not really on that level of bhava, of practical, so to speak, down to earth. I mean, in the sense of being very practical. Appreciation of what these ecstasies are. What bhava's really about. So therefore, we may experience, as we discuss these different bhavas, we may experience that understanding them all and how they relate to each other and what they're about, that it may not, sometimes it may not be so easy. It may be a little bewildering sometimes. But the thing is that even though we may not be on that level in terms of realization, and even though sometimes it may be a little difficult to grasp what is really going on, but the fact is that Srila Prabhupada has presented this book to us, The Nectar of Devotion, and Prabhupada has stressed this book quite a bit, actually. There were times when Srila Prabhupada, Shruta Kirti Prabhu, was telling us a few weeks ago, we had a festival in Odessa in Ukraine, and he did a seminar about his experiences with Prabhupada. So he told us that one day he walked in to Prabhupada's room. Srila Prabhupada was reading Nectar of Devotion. And he was just so absorbed, he didn't even notice that Shruta Kirti had walked in initially. And then, after a little while, he noticed, and then his attention shifted from the book. And Prabhupada said to him something to the effect that it is not humanly possible to write a book like this. Not that he's sort of patting himself on the back by saying that, but the point is, and he went on to say that only Krishna could have presented this. Otherwise it's not possible. And then Prabhupada said, just this one book is sufficient. Just this one book. For going back to Godhead. Yes. So, well, of course, it's also true that Prabhupada said that about a few other books. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada made the same point. And generally, in my experience reading Prabhupada's books, when Prabhupada talks about the most important of his books, in my experience, he refers to four, generally. There's Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Nectar of Devotion. Yeah. So even though this book, most of this book, in fact, is dealing with subjects which are really very high, and they're really much, much higher than we are, but because it's such an important book, then we should read it. We must read it. And according to whatever our level may be, we obviously can't be artificial. It won't help to try to be artificial. But to whatever degree we are able to actually absorb and actually get some sort of appreciation for these things, then we should do it. We must do it. Even though there'll be so many parts which will be somewhat intangible, a little difficult to really grasp, and so on. But we must do it. So we're going to do it. But at the same time, we're giving this warning, you could say, an open warning, watch out, because it's not so easy. And, you know, depending on to what degree we're on the transcendental platform or not, then we may or may not be able to really get into it. So that's just a little warning there. Now, our classes every day will go from 5 till 6. It says 6:30 there, but we're going to go to 6. We'll finish every day at 6. And we'll have a test at the end, and maybe we'll have a midterm test. We'll just see how it goes. I'll see how it goes for the first couple of days, and then we'll decide about that. But we'll definitely have some sort of test at the end. So this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. Discussing bhava bhakti, or even, if you take it a step further, rasa, and the ingredients which make rasa, or which produce rasa. This is what this course is about. So, now, in the eastern side, in the first part of Nectar of Devotion, it is described there that one can come to the level of bhava bhakti, well, of course, either through Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti or Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, that we already mentioned. But in chapter 17, Prabhupada explains that there are two ways by which you may come to the level of bhava. Now, those of you who haven't taken a seminar on Nectar of Devotion, you might not know, but those of you who have, you should know. What are the two ways? It's not Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. Mercy of Krishna or a pure devotee, that's one way. Not just mercy, but special mercy. Special mercy. And the other? Not just practice, but the rigid performance of sadhana bhakti. Faith. Yeah, well, that's part of it. But specifically, the first, in fact, the second is the special mercy. The first and, like, main method or main way is the rigid practice of sadhana bhakti, of either Vaidhi sadhana bhakti or Raghunuga sadhana bhakti. It could be either. Yes. Depending on your sort of your spiritual inclinations, really. So either the rigid execution of sadhana bhakti, either Vaidhi or Raghunuga, or special mercy. Now, Prabhupada explains that of the two, one is the usual method, and the other is quite unusual. Which do you think is the usual method? Yes. The rigid practice of devotional service. The special mercy, just getting some special blast of special mercy which just catapults you to the level of bhava, that is not so common. And Prabhupada actually compares it to getting an honorary university degree. Now, many people get university degrees. Some get honorary degrees. But the majority just go through the normal process of taking the course and doing everything and passing the exam. But some people, they just get given an honorary degree. A few years ago, that colorful personality, Mick Jagger, got an honorary degree from the London School of Economics. because, I don't know if you know the history of Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones much, but before they started, he was studying to be an economist at the London School of Economics. Anyway, he was a student there, but then he dropped out to become a Rolling Stone. And then, you know, it's like 5 years ago, something like that, they decided to give him an honorary degree. Although he only went for, I don't know how long actually, but I think a few months or, you know, not even a full year. So one of the professors protested, "Why are we giving this man an honorary degree? What does he know about economics? Because it's a science." And he said, the only thing he knows about economics is that he has a lot of money. And that's all. So in other words, honorary degrees, they don't grow on trees. And if there's a choice, which route shall I take? Shall I do the rigid execution of sadhana bhakti? Or shall I just wait for this special mercy? Then just go for the normal route. Don't sit there waiting for the special mercy to come, because it may take rather a long time. It may not happen, in other words. So normally people come to the level of bhava through the rigid execution. That means, you know, rigid. Prabhupada uses the word rigid. It means perfect sadhana bhakti. Here we are, we're all performing sadhana bhakti. We're all performing vaidhi sadhana bhakti, actually. And we have our ups and downs. But this rigid execution of sadhana bhakti means when you get to the point where there are no ups and downs, but you're completely fixed in sadhana bhakti. Either Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti or Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. Now, Prabhupada, the way he explains these two types of Sadhana Bhakti in the earlier chapters is, Prabhupada makes it very clear that they are on different levels. It is not that when you join, and, you know, you're now chanting 16 rounds and you're getting into it and maybe you get initiated, so now you're really getting into Krishna consciousness and now you're getting into sadhana bhakti. It is not like you just have a choice. Shall I do Vaidhi sadhana bhakti or shall I do Raganuga sadhana bhakti? Which shall I do? It's not quite like that. Basically, the way Prabhupada explains it is that we begin, and it's very clear if you read, for example, chapter 16 carefully, the first, say, 4 or 5 pages or so of chapter 16 carefully, that we begin with Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, the practice of devotional service according to rules and regulations, and then at a later point, and Prabhupada is quite specific about it, when you have been through the stage of anatha nivritti, in other words, you have essentially done away at least with your worst anathas. Not that you're perfect yet, because if you were perfect, it would no longer be sadhana bhakti. It would be bhava bhakti. It would be perfect devotional service. So imperfection is still there. But the main imperfections, like the grosser imperfections, are done away with on the level of anatha nivritti, and by the time you come up to the level of nishta, being steady, being fixed in Krishna consciousness. Not so fixed that you'd be considered perfect again, but basically fixed. in sadhana bhakti. So as one progresses on after the level of anatha nivritti, then, and before one comes to the level of bhava, because that is perfection. But in between, there occurs a very extraordinary, very amazing transcendental phenomenon. That is that your eternal relationship with Krishna becomes apparent to you. After all, when you come to the level of being perfect, then that means you're already, basically at least, situated in the relationship, because that is the perfection. Prema, Pumarto, Mahan, that highest goal of love of Krishna. So there are five particular forms of that perfection. So in between and through practice, one gradually approaches whatever is going to be your eternal relationship. Now, we may have already said something like right now, which may be a little sort of bewildering, but let me just read few sentences from Narada Bhakti Sutras. Actually, I didn't note which verse it is, but I think it's 6, 5 or 6 or 7, something like that. Right at the beginning of that book, there are some verses and purports which are translated and written by Prabhupada. So Prabhupada says, asakti. I hope you're familiar with this term. Asakti means attachment to Krishna, and it is the stage immediately before bhava. In other words, the highest level of sadhana bhakti is asakti. Asakti is the beginning of love of Godhead. By progressing, one then advances to the stage of relishing a reciprocal exchange with the Lord in ecstasy, bhava. Every living entity is eternally related to the Supreme Lord, and this relationship may be in any one of many transcendental humors. Many means five, actually. Either Shanta, Rasa, Dasya Rasa, Sakya Rasa, Vatsalya Rasa, or Madhurya Rasa. Yeah. So, the relationship then is in any one of those five. So Prabhupada goes on, at the stage called asakti, attachment, a person can understand his relationship with the Supreme Lord. When he understands his position, he begins reciprocating with the Lord. What does that mean? It means he begins practicing that relationship. Practicing it. It's not that you just wake up one day and now you are a cowherd boy. It's quite a deep thing to be a cowherd boy, to be a gopi. Sometimes we hear that the gopis are simple little village girls, which in a certain sense is true. But their loving exchanges with Krishna are very deep. There are so many different aspects and so many different considerations involved. You don't just wake up one morning and you're a gopi and everything is just fine. And now you just go for it with Krishna as a gopi. No, you have to learn. You have to learn how to be a gopi. It is not so simple. In fact, it is the deepest, it is the most complex, actually, of all the stages or levels of love of God. So, beyond anatha nivritti, and particularly on the level of asakti, as Prabhupada says here, a person can understand his relationship, and when he understands, he begins to reciprocate like that. So, in the higher stages of sadhana bhakti, this part of the sadhana, at least, it involves practicing for your actual relationship with Krishna. That practice. Not just practicing getting up in the morning and chanting your rounds and, you know, practicing to be a humble devotee and all these types of things, although they're also there. But it does involve practicing and learning your relationship with Krishna. This is all sadhana bhakti. This is not perfect. This is all part of sadhana bhakti, but the higher stages. So Prabhupada explains there, we're now talking about chapter 16 of Nectar of Devotion, how a devotee, having gone through anatha nivritti and become free of those low types of attractions and become really fixed up on the transcendental platform, then a devotee may become attracted, at least this is about Raghunuga sadhana bhakti, a devotee may become attracted to serving Krishna as the gopis do, or as the cowherd boys do, or as Mother Yashoda does. Or if one, of course, Raghunuga sadhana bhakti, you know, we don't want to start going into like a seminar on the eastern side. We're going into the southern side. But Raghunuga sadhana bhakti, the basic idea is that there is a thing called rag. Rag means an overwhelming attraction to Krishna in this context. In fact, it is so overwhelming that one loses sight of Krishna in any other terms than the relationship, the loving relationship. In other words, for the gopis, their rag, that powerful attachment and attraction to Krishna, is strict only in the conjugal mood. I mean, only in terms of a conjugal attraction. There is no part of their attraction to Krishna which has anything to do with Krishna being God. Whereas we are doing our devotional service and we are attracted to it. If we weren't, we wouldn't do it. So some sort of attraction is there. And one part of that attraction is that Krishna is God. And we have become convinced of that to some reasonable extent at least. So therefore we decided, right, I'm going to serve Krishna. And I'll even give up so many other things so I can serve Krishna. Because he's God. And because it makes sense, the philosophy is there. I'm not this body, I'm an eternal spirit soul, so on and so forth. All these things are there. Therefore, I'm serving Krishna. But this rag means that Srimati Radharani is serving Krishna, but only because he is her boyfriend. That's all. That's all. So this rag means a powerful attraction, which is so powerful that it overwhelms and just kind of, you know, takes the person way above any other considerations other than the loving relationship. So, therefore, when the, like Mother Yashoda is told that Krishna is God, and sometimes, you know, she may accept it and she thinks, well, that's nice. My son is God? Very good. But it's not like, oh, he's God. Like when Arjuna saw the universal form. Because Arjuna, he also has some rag as a friend. Therefore, he apologizes to Krishna in the 11th chapter. I'm so sorry. I used to address you, oh, my friend, oh, Krishna. But I didn't realize that you are God. And now I realize, oh, boy. So his friendly mood got overwhelmed by the awe and reverence and everything of seeing Krishna as God. But Mother Yashoda, in fact, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that Arjuna's experience when he saw the universal form and he understood, oh, he's God. He's not just my friend. It was so overwhelming. It was like having a heart attack. I don't know if any of you have had a heart attack. I hope not. I haven't either. I pray to Krishna that we don't, but I think we all know it's pretty devastating. So that's what it was like for Arjuna. But when Mother Yashoda, for example, looked in Krishna's mouth and saw the universe and realized, oh, my son must be God, it didn't affect her like that at all. In fact, she just thought, oh, that's nice. I'm really fortunate. My son is God. Then she looked in Krishna's eyes, and that motherly mood just swept away this idea that he's God. Just swept it away. So this is what this rag does. So raganuga sadhana bhakti means, and Prabhupada explains very clearly, anuga means to follow, and it is sadhana, it is a practice. So you are practicing devotional service, following someone who has rag. And who has rag? It's mainly the inhabitants of Vrindavan. There are others, but it's mainly the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And you are practicing devotional service, following them. So, I think on Monday, we'll just discuss a little bit more about sadhana bhakti and what happens as one progresses in sadhana bhakti, either vaidhi or raganuga, and that'll just kind of give a platform for going into bhava bhakti or going into the discussion about bhava bhakti. Because it's bhava bhakti is very elevated. So if we don't take a little time just to kind of get a perspective on it, then it may be difficult to appreciate how elevated it is. Okay. So I guess that'll do for today. Any comments or questions? Yes. In Madhurya Kadambini, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it's particularly that you'll never lose interest in hearing and chanting about Krishna. If you're sleepy, but then you start hearing and chanting about Krishna, you'll immediately become fixed, not in sleeping, but in hearing and chanting. If there's some talk going on, something that could distract you, but then you start hearing and chanting, immediately you'll become focused on the hearing and chanting. Yeah. So he explains in those terms that one's attraction to hearing and chanting is very fixed and can hardly become deviated from that. I mean, that might sound like a kind of slightly esoteric or, I don't know, maybe over-simple type of explanation, but if you think about it, you'll see that it's a very good one. It's very, very good. When he saw the universal form, too much attracted. Not really. It's not really raga. That's more like maybe some little touch, like a little touch of ruchi or taste. It would be more like that rather than bhava. Although, having said that, let me just close by saying that one devotee wrote to Prabhupada once from London, right back, I mean like 71 or so, and said, Srila Prabhupada, sometimes when I see the deities, Radha Landanishwara, very beautiful deities, sometimes I just find I start crying. You know, is something wrong with me or what is it? Something like that. So Prabhupada's short, straight answer was, this is bhava. Now the person had been a devotee, you know, for maybe 5 years or something like that. So in other words, you know, we have a propensity for making things very linear. What, from one thing to another thing to another thing, and it's just like that. But here in bhakti, it is not really so linear. I mean, there's a linear aspect. It's all, you know, achintya, bheda, bheda, tattva. But it's not simply linear. In other words, it is not impossible for a relatively neophyte devotee to have sometimes, some touch of bhava or ruchi or asakti. It's not impossible. It's not just, you know, black and white. You just go from one stage to the next, and you're either on this stage or that stage. And if you're on that stage, you're not on this stage. It's not so linear like that. But these things tend to be very mixed together. Although there will be a main theme, which will be the main indication of where you are, generally. But otherwise, there can be a lot of mixing. And even on the lower stages of higher things manifesting either momentarily or in kind of reflected ways, you know, in all different types of ways. I think this will become apparent as we go through. Yeah. All right, we'll finish here and we'll see you on Monday. Please do get a Nectar of Devotion. It would really be worthwhile. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.